Hi everyone, it's Grace. Before we start our episode, I want to tell you about two things. First, the Where the Mountain Meets the Moon trilogy calendar I've been working on is finally out. It's available from the Eric Carle Museum bookstore, and if you purchase a book of mine at the same time, you'll get 10% off. The link is in the show notes. The second thing is that my other podcast, Kids Ask Authors, now has a Patreon page. Even if you don't listen to that podcast, becoming a patron helps this podcast too, since I produce both of them, and support would be greatly appreciated. And if you become a patron of that podcast, there are some really great perks, like the exclusive Random Question podcast only for patrons. On that podcast, I ask authors extremely random questions with always interesting answers. Don't you want to know what food Jason Reynolds can't bring himself to eat? Or what Jacqueline Woodson always buys at the grocery store? Become a patron of Kids Ask Authors to find out. The link is also in the show notes. Thanks so much, and now on to our episode.
Hi, I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lynn.
And we're Book Friends Forever!
We're childhood friends that grew up to be
a children's book editor
and an author and illustrator.
Welcome to Book Friends Forever, the burnout episode. Every week we catch up with each other's lives, talk about what's on our minds, and share with each other what we're grateful for.
And check out our website, bookfriendsforever.com. The website will include more detailed show notes as well as links to the episodes.
And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy our podcast, please tell a friend about it. So, Grace, how have you been this week?
Pretty good. I mean, so, like, there's always a million things to do. But one of the big things that we decided to do was to organize and get Hazel, my daughter, horseback riding lessons.
Cool.
So I think last episode or the episode before, I talked about how we all went to Mike's Maze, which is kind of like this, like, outdoor maze place was like on a farm. And one of the things that they had there was pony rides. So Hazel went on a pony ride and she just loved it so much. And she was so like glowing and she was hugging the pony and she just couldn't, she's like, I don't want to leave him, you know? So, and the woman who was doing the pony ride, she said, well, you know, our farm also offers horseback riding lessons and we have this camp. And so I took down all the information. And the other day we went to go visit it and it was just great. And so we're going to organize some lessons for her. So it was really good. You know, I have to admit that I was a little bit worried and a little bit hesitant to go get horseback riding lessons for her. We live in Western Massachusetts, so it's kind of more rural. So like sometimes when you say horseback riding lessons, like to somebody maybe like in the city, they think like it's a very
fancy
equestrian, mm-hmm. you know, yep. like a very,
like the, you have the royal to be very family.
Rich. Yes. But you know, here it's at least my opinion of it has always been like, oh, well, we're like kind of in the farmland. So it's kind of more like farmers, not like equestrians. But the pony ride that Hazel took, it was actually her second pony ride. Her first pony ride was when, I think in about 2015, when she was much younger. And the same thing had happened back then. She just loved it so much. And she was like loving it, the horse so much. And I remember thinking all the way back then, oh, maybe I should look into horseback riding for her. But then I guess a couple weeks later after that, I ran into some acquaintances of mine who I didn't know really, I don't really know really well, but I always thought they were nice enough. And they mentioned that their daughter rode horses. And I remember saying, oh, that's so great. I was thinking about getting horseback riding lessons for my daughter because she really loves horses and things. Where does your daughter take lessons? And I remember the reaction was so off-putting. You know, they didn't tell me the stable that their daughter took lessons, and their whole attitude, I don't even remember exactly what they said, but their whole attitude was kind of like, oh, how quaint, how cute, you think you're good enough to take, your family is good enough to take writing lessons. Like, it was
really?
It was such a off-putting thing. And, I didn't have the wherewithal back then to call them out on that. I just kind of smiled and like, but, you know, I wish I had the bravery or the willingness to say, I was like, oh, you know, why do you say that? And if I even had even more bravery, I'd be like, are you saying that because you don't think we're rich enough or because we're not white enough? You know, like, because that was really the impression they were giving me. Yeah. And I remember that, I remember it really kind of changed my opinion of them after that. I mean, like I said, they've always been fine, and it's fine after that too, I guess. But it's always made me feel like very uncomfortable. And all that to say is that I was very nervous about getting her horseback riding lessons, because I was really scared that, like, are we going to go to the stable and we're going to find out that, you know, everybody has to wear the right breeches and the right helmet and, like, you know, have this be this very, like, kind of elitist thing. And so I was, like, really on the, like, really scoping the place out really carefully for that. But it was so not that way at all. Like, the stable was like, yeah, we're really into community, you know, we're into community riding, and we just want kids to just love riding, and we don't really look into, don't do sport and jumping too much. I mean, they can if they want to, but that's not really our emphasis. And our good friend Libby, actually, she was another person who was, like, warning me, like, be careful, like, it gets really expensive really fast if you're at one of those stables that, like, all the girls have to wear the same breeches, you know, like, and she said, ask them if they only do English saddles or English riding, and if they only do English, you know that that's, that they're kind of snobby that way. So I was like, do you only do English? And she's like, oh no, we do Western and English. And I was like, oh, okay, good. So it was like all these, like, little things that I was, like, searching for, saying, like, okay, check, good. So I'm really excited. I think it's going to be a good match for her. So Hazel must be excited. That's, oh my gosh. Again, when we brought her to the stable to check it out, like, she's in love with the horse named Peppy. she's like hugging Peppy. She's like, I don't want to leave Peppy. Like, she did that at the pony ride, and she didn't want to do it. She did it again at the stable.
That's like, that would have been my dream as a little, I mean, I was one of those girls that loved reading horse books, drawing horses,
so was I. Like, actually, I was a huge unicorn girl, but the same thing with horses. I loved horses, and that's actually one of the reasons why I decided that we really should look into it. Like, I kept going back and forth, like, oh, it's expensive, it's snobby, and then there's another part of me like, but I would have loved it, yeah. You know? Like, I would have really wanted that experience, you know? Yeah. So it was,
that's
like
wonderful.
That. Jungling. So I think, so we're going for it, and I think it's going to be, I have high hopes that she's going to really love it. So another thing that we're doing is getting ready for Halloween, right? And so, and because of COVID, we're not really sure that it's safe to go trick-or-treating. I know my daughter really wants to, so we've been trying to find other ways to celebrate. And so our alternative plan, which I'm pretty sure we're going to do, is what she is calling trick or tree. What we're going to do is we're going to take all this candy and we're going to hang it on our tree. And we're going to hang it on a tree with different colored clips. And then we're going to invite the girls from her pod to come over. And they're all going to get a color. And they're all going to, like, pick the candy from the tree that's their color clip. and they'll have to yell trick or treat each time they take a piece of candy. And so that's our new idea, trick or treat. And then afterwards, I think we'll watch a movie outside. I'm trying to find a really good movie to show on Halloween that's spooky but not too scary. Right now, I think we're going to go with, like, Wallace and Gromit, like, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, you know. But if any listeners have a good suggestion, I'd be happy to hear it. We don't want it to be scary, at all, like definitely rated G. Mm-hmm. So if you have anything, I'd love to hear it.
Fun.
Anyway, how have you been, Alvina?
I have been pretty good. So last week I was in Brooklyn, which was really nice to be there and see a bunch of friends. And also we had really great news last week in terms of the bestseller, the New York Times bestseller list. So the list came out on Wednesday, and we had three number one New York Times bestsellers
wow,
on the same week.
That's amazing.
So we had the number one picture book, which was The Office, A Day at Dunder Mifflin Elementary, which was, it was exciting because it was our licensing team. You know, they had approached NBC about doing this, and it's really adorable because it's all the characters, you know, as like little kids. And it's so cute, but it has been doing so well. But that was like their first, you know, picture book number one. So that was exciting. And then Chris Colfer's A Tale of Witchcraft was number one on the middle grade list, which was really exciting because we weren't sure if we would be number one because Jeff Kinney has been just selling like crazy cakes. And then Stamped, which has been pretty, you know, it has been number one for quite a while. So that wasn't a surprise, but it was just really great. So it was just felt like a really great time for LBYR. So I was really proud of that.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yay.
And last week was also our sales conference. So yeah, so it's good timing.
So everybody's going in on a high. That's great.
Yeah. Sorry, you were going to ask me a question?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, especially now, because I feel like it's such a weird time for sales.
I know.
So it's really nice to hear that your company is doing well.
Yeah, it is a weird time. But we are doing, we're having a really great year sales-wise, so I cannot complain about that. But it's just a really busy time, too, of course. I don't know if I mentioned this on a previous podcast episode, but we are currently training to switch our internal systems. Like these are the systems that like where we put in all of our metadata for our books that eventually feed out to Amazon and Barnes and Noble. And it's just, you know, it's like, it's basically our, where all the schedules go, all the, you know, every, all the information, the fact sheets for sales conference. And so it's a really crucial system, and we are upgrading and changing our system. So for basically 3 weeks, we've been in like really long trainings, like 9 a.m. to 12, you know, like there have been several 3-hour trainings, a lot of 2-hour trainings, and it's, and that's of course on top of just our regular work. So it's been kind of a little bit crazy, but good and busy. But that, of course, leads us to our topic for today, which is burnout. You know, so burnout is actually a real condition that, according to Merriam-Webster Dictionary, it's defined as exhaustion of physical or emotional strength or motivation, usually as a result of prolonged stress or frustration. And sadly, I think it's really relevant when it comes to working in publishing and book publishing and the children's book industry. So we thought we'd discuss moments where maybe we've felt we've suffered from burnout, maybe ways to prevent burnout, and how we recharge. So Grace, have you experienced burnout?
like right now? Actually, no, I am not. I am not experiencing burnout right now. I think I am definitely experiencing overwhelm, and I think that that is something that I'm often in, is a state of overwhelm. It's usually like less overwhelm, more overwhelm, less overwhelm, more overwhelm. And I think overwhelm to me is kind of like just having so many things to do and the worry of being able to do them all, you know, and the anxiety of not being able to do them well, you know, and also like the fear of missing out, like what am I not doing. I think overwhelm is kind of like that that anxious feeling. It's like the anxiety.
Yeah, well, it's stress,
you
right?
know. Yeah, it's the stress and anxiety, but it's not burnout. I think it's still about, you know, 2 or 3 steps away from burnout. I think burnout, I think, is like when you're done, you know, like you're not even, you can't even feel the anxiety anymore because you're just so tired. Like you just can't care anymore. It's like more of a despair and hopelessness feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, so I feel like I've only, in terms of work, I mean, I think I've had that despair feeling, you know, in my personal life, especially when like Robert died and things like that. But in terms of work, I think the closest I came to that was when Hazel was a toddler. And it was just like this overwhelming feeling of like, I just can't do anything right. Mm-hmm. And I just can't do it. I can't do anything. Why am I either even bothering? You know, like there's no use. So why even try? And I think that it's like that hopeless feeling. That's when you know that you've hit burnout, that like you feel so powerless that you don't even want to try.
Right. Yeah. I think for me, you know, honestly, I don't know if I've ever reached full burnout but I feel like I'm like consistently on the brink of it. Mm-hmm. And kind of, yes, like feeling like the analogy I always use is treading water. Like I feel like I'm, mm-hmm. I never fully drown, but I am always treading water and always like barely keeping my nose above water so that I can breathe. And I'm always in danger of slipping under. So just a lot of stress, I think, in terms of like work pressures. And then when that's combined with life pressures, like with when Greg was sick, and like that was when I was close. And I think, you know, I remember leading up to my sabbatical, actually, like, I think after the fact, I realized that I was burned out, like, because I was, you know, like, as they say, like burning the candle at both ends. And I was just trying to get everything done so that I could like do nothing for a month. And then I ended up like really needing like that month to recharge. And it was, you know, it ended up being amazing. But I think I, you know, that like the fact that I couldn't like stop having work dreams for 2 weeks, you know, into my sabbatical, yeah. I think was really telling of like just how, I don't know, how much stress I was under.
What I think is interesting is how I feel like we are always so close to burnout. Mm-hmm. You know, like I feel like, as I said earlier, I feel like we're always in the state of overwhelm. And sometimes it's like two or three steps away from burnout, but sometimes we're only one step away. And I feel like very often we are only one step away from burnout. So mm-hmm. it's a really interesting thing. Like I feel like this pandemic, I felt like definitely before I set up the pod and before the pod was set up, I was definitely always one step away from burnout. Like now that the pod is working and like I'm not having to juggle being with Hazel and like trying to get work done and trying to figure out how to support a family and all those necessary things and paying the bills, like, I can see how close I was to burnout, like that exhaustion. And I even actually kind of look back at myself in awe and said, wow, you really did a lot. Yeah. I remember how like tired I would be like coming after doing craft camp and like coming in just like, I can't move. Yeah. And so, and I realized like I was really one step away from burnout, and I think I knew it, and that's why I worked so hard to try to get this pod to work, and that's why I worked so hard to set it all up, and I'm really glad I did, but it was really self-preservation now that I look at it. Like, sure, I can say, yes, I'm thinking about my daughter's social and emotional well-being and her education, but I think it was really deep down, it was all self-preservation and trying to figure out how I would not hit burnout.
Yeah, like there's some situations where I think adrenaline just takes over. So for me, like when Greg was sick and I was like working really hard and long hours too, like I feel like it was just like 3 years of adrenaline like keeping me, because I knew I had to, you know. And I think that's probably the same with like new mothers, you know, like who are just exhausted. But I think at the beginning of the pandemic, that probably is, in terms of like emotional and physical exhaustion, I think that's maybe the closest that I've felt, because I like for the first time I like hit, you know, 5 p.m. and I just like, I can't work 1 minute longer. Like I cannot read anything. Mm-hmm. I cannot look at this computer screen, you know, and like, it was like this, my body was like rebelling and I just couldn't, you know, work the normal, you know, hours that I used to be able to work pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. So I think that was like a combination of like really it was like, now I'm remembering, it was like the Disney, you know, when, you know, that had all happened at the beginning of the year. And then when the pandemic came, it was like this anxiety and stress combined with all of that. And I just, I think my mind and body just rebelled. So, for me, when that happened, I it does help for me to just like do nothing, right? For at least have like one or two days where I can just like veg or just rest and watch.
So how do you veg? Is it just watching TV?
Yeah, I would say watching TV is the way I veg. Well, you know, also I think it's like doing something that doesn't take any active motion. So like for me, it could be like listening to an audiobook or listening to a podcast. Like even reading a book at that point is like too much. But if I could just like be passive and just like rest while listening to something, that helps me. I will say though, exercise, like I know that kind of goes against physical exhaustion, but I think that is how I can help prevent burnout, is if I'm just like physically active.
I guess there's two things. What do you do to prevent burnout, and what do you do when you've hit burnout?
Like to kind of recharge.
Yourself out of it. Yeah. So to prevent burnout, you exercise. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I would say that. To prevent burnout, I work out and exercise. And I think, so vacation, I think for both, can help for both. So both if I am burnt out and also to prevent. Like if I can schedule a day off or schedule a vacation, sometimes it's like I schedule it right in time. And I can also feel like I'm feeling like, oh my gosh, I really need a break. If I don't get a break soon, I'm gonna burn out. So I think kind of being really strategic about when I'm scheduling vacations and making sure that, you know, that I'm taking vacation days and really unplugging, like that really helps too. How about you?
A lot of it depends on what kind of burnout it is or what kind of overwhelm it is. I know for this pandemic, the thing that saved me from going into burnout and just kept me in the overwhelm was when I took those long, long walks in the morning. I mean, they were just so long, like 2-hour walks. Like I got up so early and I just walked for 2 hours, but it was just like that stillness of like being by myself, you know, like, and like not, right. Not doing anything, you know? And I know, like, I used to do like walk and talks with my sister and with Libby, our good friend. But like, I remember at that time, I was like, I just don't even want to, like, it's not that I don't want to talk to you, but I just don't want to talk to anybody. Right. Like, I just need to be alone. Mm-hmm. And even so now, like when I've been cutting down on realizing that I need more time to work, like I had the choice between cutting down my walks or cutting down my workouts. And it was the workouts I cut out. Like, I just can't let go of these long walks. It's like, I feel like I need them. And if I don't have these long walks, then I will go insane because I just need that alone time. Mm-hmm. Away from the house, away from my work, away from my family, you know? So that's been my go-to. I also what I like to do is like read old books. Mm-hmm. Not my old books, like books that I read when I was younger,
like comfort,
you know, that's
reading.
Always been, yeah, I always do comfort. Well, my big thing is comfort reading and eating, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like reading Charlie and the Chocolate Factory while eating chocolate.
Yeah.
or it's always like eating the food that they have in the book. Like that's kind of like my, I guess that's my, is a guilty pleasure. Like other people like watch TV and stuff, but like the thing that like brings me like the greatest joy is like reading a book and eating the same food that the characters are eating.
Fine.
I would like much rather do that than like watch TV. I would much rather just like eat chocolate while reading Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Give you or let you borrow this cookbook that one of the authors I work with, Lev Rosen, he gave me this book, cookbook, that's, it's like literary contemporary recipes. So it's like taking, yeah, exactly what you're saying, like taking the recipes that they make or the food that they make and eat in these books and
I have like the Anne of Green Gables cookbooks and I have the Little House on the Prairie cookbook and like, so I do tend to do a lot of a lot of those things.
Something else I like to do is, you know, pre-pandemic is get massages and manicures. I think whenever, especially if it's work-related burnout, like it's if I have time to do something for myself that is unnecessary, like it's just purely like, you know, I guess what someone might call self-care. Like, then I just feel a little bit better. Like, okay, you know, I have time, you know, I'm not completely overwhelmed and I have time to take some time out for myself. So that helps too. And I also talked about, like, when we talked about work-life balance, like, I am really good about scheduling lots of brunches and dinners and karaoke and, you know, like, trying to make sure I have some fun time scheduled so it's not all work, I guess, and no play.
Yeah, well, you know, the things that I do for preventing burnout or to get out of burnout, like, it depends on what's causing the burnout, you know, like, actually, like, today, I splurged and did what I'm calling, like, optimism shopping, because, like, I'm realizing, I'm feeling kind of a little depressed about the pandemic, you know, like, it's just going on, and, you know, everybody's in the same boat, but I haven't, because money's been tight and all those things, and, you know, and I haven't really done a lot of shopping, but today I was just like, you know what, I'm just gonna buy myself some new clothes, and one of the things that I bought was just completely frivolous, right? It's like this beautiful dress that I saw like back in January that I thought was beautiful, and I remember I pinned it to put on my like 2020 vision board, which I never got around to doing. But like, there's always like the dress that you'll wear when you go to the Oscars, like, or like for like one of the many, one of the things that I always have on my, my yearly wishes is like have an event to get dressed up for, you know, like, so that was going to be like my dress that I would wear when there is an event to get dressed up for. And like this whole pandemic, I was thinking like, there's not going to be any events to get dressed up for. Like there's nothing's going to happen that's going to be special that you would wear a special dress to, you know? And I remember just thinking like, you know what? I'm still going to get the dress. Mm-hmm. And with the idea of like, I'm going to be optimistic. Like, yes, maybe I won't wear it in 2020, but this pandemic's gonna end sometime, and this dress will be the dress I wear when something good happens, when there's a big event to get dressed up for, and there's gotta be one someday. So I bought this completely frivolous, almost ball gown.
But it brings you joy.
With that, yeah, and if I just look at it every day and be like, someday, like, it's like my hope, my dress of hope. So that's what I did. So that's what I did today. And I'm going to say that it's going to be one of the things that help me not burn out. But then, you know, there's other things that cause, you know, that I do, like, sometimes the burnout, or I don't think it's burnout. Sometimes the overwhelm is, you know, things outside of my control, like the election, like the state of the industry, like politics. And, you know, I remember the 2016 election, I felt a lot of overwhelm. And we've talked about that a lot. And I was really sad and depressed about that. And I remember the thing that really kind of helped get me out of that was actually starting Kid Lit Women, you know, and doing that Kid Lit Women podcast. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like it's was the idea of doing something that makes you feel powerful. You know, like, I know I can't, like, change the children's book industry. I know I can't change, like, sexism, and I can't change racism, but maybe I can change just this teeny tiny drop of it by having this, like, Kid Lit Women podcast, you know? And then, like, now with the election, like, yes, I can't change my parents' mind about the election, but maybe I can bring some voters to vote. So, like, I've been doing that postcards to voters that I mentioned last time, and I'm like brainstorming ideas of how to do a little video with my When You Grow Up to Vote book, and like creating little posters that I'll let people download, you know. And it's not like I think it's going to really move the needle or anything, but it's just something to help me feel like I'm doing something, you know, mm-hmm. like it's that my power isn't completely gone, that it's not hopeless, like I can do something. So I think those are the things that get me out of the depression or the burnout, is the action of feeling like, okay, I can't do this, but I can do this, right. and doing that thing that I can do.
So things that bring you yourself purpose.
Yeah. So I think that's probably what helps the most when it comes to when you hit that despair for me, mm-hmm. is just finding that something that makes it feel like I'm not as powerless as I feel. Mm-hmm. So that's what has helped me.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Have you ever hit that like rock bottom?
No, I've never hit rock bottom, but it's fun, interesting, because as you were talking, I realized that in a way, burnout is similar, I think, to grief. Like when you just, you know, are feeling yeah. like, yeah, you can't deal, right? You can't deal with the world. And so I was thinking that one thing that really helped me is to focus on something beautiful. So like, to me, it is like getting out in nature and just like soaking in the beauty, and just like a reminder that the world is bigger than you, that's bigger than your problems, that's, you know, bigger than whatever is going mm-hmm. on. So in a way, that, yeah, that same feeling, I mean, I guess it's not that it makes me feel powerful, because in a way it makes you feel like a tiny speck in the world, but yet somehow that makes you feel powerful in a way, just like that you're a part of the whole world and you're part of nature. So that's something that helps me.
It's interesting. I do remember, in terms of grief, though, it took me a while to appreciate beautiful things after Robert died. Because I remember after he died, I would experience something beautiful, and it would like hurt me so much that he couldn't experience it with me. You know, like, and it took me a long time to let that go, and just to like experience, like, yes, it's beautiful and I can enjoy it, you know, like,
it's kind of like when you're single and you see like a happy couple together. Like, I feel like sometimes it makes you feel like, oh, I have hope that could happen for me. And sometimes you're like, you know, it kind of fills you with despair that you're alone. So
yeah.
it's like, it's funny that it kind of depends on your mood, depends on the situation. But in a way, and everyone's different. So I think that's what's also interesting, is I'm curious to hear what our listeners have to say about techniques they use, or how they prevent burnout, how they recharge. We'd love more ideas. And now we'll end, as we always do, with what we're grateful for. Grace, what are you grateful for?
All right, so what am I grateful for? Well, I'm grateful for a couple of things. I'm grateful that, number one, my board books, the storytelling math board books that I did with Charles Bridge, they just came out on Tuesday. Yay. So they are now out in the world. And, you know, I'm really proud of them. I think it's been interesting to see them out in the world, like, and to see, you know, because it's such a weird time, like with this COVID thing, and seeing if they make any splash or not. But it's been nice. I think that a lot of educators have appreciated them, which has been lovely. Like, you know, I did the 5 questions for the Horn book about them, and that was really nice, because I've always kind of wanted to, like, I always read the Horn book and I'll see the 5 questions, or like the Talk with Roger, and I'll be like, oh, I want to do one of those. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, hey, I got to do it. So I got to do one. I got to do the 5 questions with the Horn book this time. So that was kind of like, oh, hey. So it's kind of neat to have that like off the bucket list, I guess.
Cool.
So I'm grateful for that. I'm also really grateful for my book review club. So I'm gonna explain it a little bit because our listeners might not remember, but I have my other podcast, Kids Ask Authors. And for that podcast, every episode we end with a kid book review. And in the past, we just used book reviews that kids called in at our phone number. And they were great and we love them. They're usually so funny and or well done or like, you know, they just ran the gamut. And you just never knew what you're going to get just because, you know, because they were kids. But when the whole thing happened with George Floyd, and I wanted to highlight Black authors and Black books, I started going through all the kid book reviews, and I realized we didn't have any kid book reviews that were of Black authored books. Mm-hmm. And that really made me feel really uncomfortable. And so if you remember, I decided to start the Kid Book Review Club. And so like I've solicited all these kids and I have 6 kids each season. And we meet once a month and I send them all these books. I send them as many diverse books as I can get my hands on, usually like by begging publishers and trying not to bankrupt myself. That's been really hard. And sending them all like these diverse books. And then we meet once a month and then I record their reviews. And it's been so great. The kids are so enthusiastic and they're like, and they really take it professionally. Like, you know, before I was just like, you just have to say one sentence here and 2 sentences, like why you like it. But no, they're like writing like whole paragraphs and whole pages. And they're like, hello, I'm Winnie Wen, and I am 7 and I'm 10 years old. And I am, you know, like, they're like really, really like professional. And it's so awesome to see them so enthusiastic about books. I mean, actually the hardest thing is getting them enough books. Like, I've only met with them twice and they're like, we need more books. We need more books. And I'm like, okay, I'll do what I can. You know, like we need more books. And also what's really interesting is how, because the publishers aren't not doing that many paper ARCs, advanced reading copies, they do offer like NetGalley widgets that I've been passing on to the kids. And it's so interesting to see how the kids don't really like to read online. Mm-hmm. Like that's always the last thing they go to. Like if I send them paper books, they'll read those, like all the paper books. And then like last meeting, there's like, we're so desperate for books, we had to read the widgets. Like, we had to read the NetGalley books. And so I was like, well, that's good. but they're like, they don't really want to read online, which is such so interesting, right? Because in book publishing, so for so long, we're all like, oh, paper books are going away. It's only going to be ebooks from now on. And how I feel like that was actually kind of a fallacy.
Yeah, I mean, definitely was. I mean, I still don't read ebooks. I can't. I mean, it just doesn't feel right. So yeah, I definitely think kids are the same way.
Well, I guess I thought for our generation it would still be paper, but I remember a lot of people saying, well, you don't know, like, yes, right now we love paper, but, you know, kids, they're going to grow up with screens, so it's not going to be a big deal for them to read off of screens. And I think it is a big deal. They do see a difference, at least the real dedicated readers see a difference. So anyway, what are you grateful for?
Oh, I am. Well, I mentioned this training that we've been in for 3 weeks. And, you know, I have to say, I'm really grateful for all of my colleagues and coworkers, because we're kind of, it's one of those, like, we're all in this together moments, you know, and so we've all been on all these trainings. And the way we're facilitating the trainings is sometimes, or mostly it's our colleagues who are facilitating the training. So we have some, they're called our super users. So they kind of are in more meetings to really get to know the technology so that they can turn around and teach us, which is really great because like they're in our department and they know what we use the system for, and they, you know, so they can anticipate the questions and all of that. And also it's just kind of fun because we, you know, they call on people to volunteer and, you know, walk through things and the chat is going and people, some, you know, making jokes, and I don't know. It's really a hectic, busy time. But it's just a reminder of like, oh, how much I love all my colleagues and that we're all in this together. So that's what I'm grateful for this week.
Aw, that's great. So Allison Morris, the Senior Director of Title Selection at First Book, has been on vacation for the past couple weeks, which is why we have not had her reviews lately. But she is back from vacation now, and so here is our two-minute book review segment featuring Allison Morris, the Senior Director of Title Selection at First Book. Welcome back, Allison!
Hello, book friends! My husband and I just returned from a lovely, much-needed vacation, and in the car on the way home, we fell under the spell of Before the Ever After, the newest novel in verse by beloved author and new MacArthur Genius Grant recipient Jacqueline Woodson. It's great for students in middle school and high school, and great to listen to on audio. Before the Ever After tells the story of a loving African-American family in which Asan and his parents are grappling with the physical pain, personality, and behavioral changes that have forced his dad, a star player, to quit playing professional football after years of taking too many blows to the head. It is heartbreaking to watch the way CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, changes his dad's ability to work, to function, and to get through the day, but, as is always true in Jacqueline Woodson's books, this is a story steeped in compassion. Throughout the book, I felt grateful for the close bond between this boy and his father and the love that carries their family through the stress of uncertainty and doctors' seeming inability to figure out what is going on or to offer lasting help. While the story is set in the 1990s, its topic is just as relevant today, and the experiences of its characters are just as relatable. I also want to recommend a great photographic nonfiction book for the same group that I think would be perfect to pair with Jacqueline's novel. Fourth Down and Inches, Concussions and Football's Make or Break Moment by Carla Killa McCafferty. I read this book when it came out in 2013, and I found it both informative and fascinating, and the content of the book has really stayed with me. It explains the origins and evolution of football and how head injuries influence the playing and rules of the game, at times even threatening its continued existence. Whether or not you're a football fan, I recommend reading Before the Ever After by Jacqueline Woodson and Fourth Down and Inches by Carla Killa McCafferty. I'm Allison Morris. That's Allison L. Morris on Twitter and Kid Lit Girl on Instagram. Thank you for listening and have a great week.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks to Hachette Audio, Little Brown Books for Young Readers, and Alex at PC Work Studio for producing and editing this podcast. You can find me at Planet Alvina on Twitter and at Alvina Ling on Instagram.
And I'm at Pacey Lynn on both platforms. We love hearing feedback, so keep tagging and messaging us on social media using the hashtag BookFriendsForever, or send us a message via our website, bookfriendsforever.com. You can also see more detailed show notes there.
And if you have any suggestions for future topics to cover, please let us know. And of course, please remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you like this podcast, please tell a friend about it. I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lynn.
Have a great week.
And don't forget to read.
Bye.